Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, welcome to Android Faithful, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps in the world of Android. I'm Quinn Tweddow.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And I am Ron Richards. And look at us. Here we are back together.
Dancing, partying.
We got no Michal, unfortunately, because he is en route to Samsung Unpacked tomorrow, which is pretty cool.
En route.
Yeah, en route.
Busy.
En route.
He's a busy man.
Route? En route, I think.
En route.
En route. En route. Okay. En route.
Yeah. En route.
En route. Yeah. En route. Yeah. So we got no Michal this week, but it's delightful to be back with you, Jason Nguyen. It's always fun, right?
Good to see you.
Yes, well,
you,
I mean, without a doubt, or not, without a doubt, we would be remiss if we did not have a guest that we do have the benefit of the doubt of having. I'm going to keep doing the puns because we're very lucky to have tonight Mr. Adam Dowd joining us.
Oh,
hello.
And his OnePlus.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello.
We almost thought you weren't there. We saw a phone and thought maybe you were replaced by a phone.
That was my evil plan all along.
The deep fakes are incredibly deep. I thought that wasn't actually a OnePlus. Is that a 12? Is that OnePlus?
The deepest.
I appreciate the doubt puns, though. That's very on brand
for my show. Yeah, when you say without a doubt, though, without a doubt, but then you are here, so I always get confused about how to word that to turn it into a positive.
Yeah. Well, you know, no doubt about it. It can be difficult.
No doubt.
Oh, there it is.
Boy, it just keeps happening.
There you go.
It's yeah. Like once Huawei comes on the show and everything turns into a W.
Adam, I am so excited to have you on the show this week because I believe you are our first guest of 2024.
Am I?
Yeah. So congratulations.
That's fun.
There you are. Yeah. So that
is
that
you
is
a crown
cool.
though.
That next is an time. Esteemed title to have at least until 2025.
So. Nobody can take it away from me. It's all mine.
But yeah, but sure enough, we wanted you on the show this week. Not only talk about that Neato device that you were holding up, our video viewers saw the new hotness from OnePlus, but also we're doing a little bit of a CES kind of wrap up, and we are going to hear from Michal because we did talk to him yesterday. And recorded a bit with some of the stuff he saw at CES. And then, Adam, we'd love to hear from you about what you saw at CES because CES, it feels like a month ago, but it was only last week. Right?
I know.
It was so long ago. Like, no, I mean, and I can say it was genuinely a long time ago because I'm halfway back to feeling like a human.
Yeah.
Did you get the conflu? I really hope you did.
No. Okay, no, good. 4 years. Well, 4 years I've been there, and great. 4 years coming home healthy. But that's because I haven't shaken a hand since 2020. So that's
okay, good.
What do you do instead? Do you fist bump or
team fist bump, baby?
Yeah. Ooh, okay.
And it's funny. Like this year, everybody was so amused by it. Like, you know, they'd be like, "Oh, you know, hi, I'm so and so," and they'd be like, "I do this," and they're like, "Oh, isn't that delightful?"
I never get to fist bump.
I do.
Are we at the point where we can be nostalgic about the pandemic and like be like, "Ah, ha, ha," like, or is it still too real?
Depends on who you ask.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Well, because I do enjoy the fact. I didn't enjoy the fact, but I did find it fascinating when COVID hit in 2020, and there was all this kind of like, "What is going on?" I saw one article that traced it to CES 2020. Because it was in exactly. And so the all the folks coming over from China, and then they traced it to whoever patient zero was, and then went back to the Bay Area, and then kind of how it went from there. So CES is not only gonna make us all get exhausted, but is also part of the decline of civilization. So.
And apparently also going to kill Wynn.
People who watch the live screen can make fun of, like, I always have this big ass water bottle. Well, guess what? It bit me today. This big water bottle.
Did you just snort, Wynn? Was that a snort that I heard?
Slightly.
A snortle?
A snortle. I got a snortle. Anyway. A snort chortle. A little bit going on.
So, fun fact about the pandemic, one of the first cases reported in the United States was in a hospital about 3 miles from my house.
Oh, fascinating.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the first U.S. cases that was officially identified as COVID-19.
Did that person go to CES?
No. But there were quite a few of my, you know, of my friends and colleagues who came home from CES and, you know, were sick and for some reason lost their sense of taste and smell. And all the doctors at that point were like, "Well, that's weird. What's happening there?"
A really bad mold. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
What could cause that? Yeah. So. All right. Well, I didn't mean to derail us with pandemic stories, but so before we get to the CES goodness, there's some news to talk about, right? The aforementioned Unpacked.
Yeah. And you know who isn't quite doing as well as they could be, not related to the pandemic or maybe kind of tangentially related, is Samsung. And in a report or some data that came out from the International Data Corporation, IDC, after 13 years at the top, Samsung is no longer the world's largest smartphone manufacturer. Take your bets now for who it is. Okay, betting time is over. It's Apple, basically.
Oh, I was gonna guess Tecmo.
Close. I wish. So no. In 2023, iOS took over, or rather, Apple overtook Samsung to become the world's largest smartphone manufacturer. That's after 13 years of Samsung at the top. They did take the crown from Nokia in 2010. And it kind of like, it's really interesting because we talked a lot about data kind of at the end of 2023, right? Where everyone's seeing smartphone shipments go down throughout most of like Q1, Q2 of 2023 because of, you know, economic uncertainty, instability, crisis, macroeconomic situations. But there was, you know, a lot of estimates that, you know, in Q4, part of the markets are going to bounce back. And no one bounced back harder than Apple going from 226.3 million units shipped in 2022 with a market share of 18.8, all the way up to now 234.6 million iPhones shipped, and that's 20.1% of the smartphone market. So that's a decent jump. It's more significant, though, that Samsung's share has gone quite a bit down. They now are at 19.4% of the market with 226.6 million units shipped. And that's a drop from 2022 of 35.6 million units. So, definitely it makes sense that Apple would probably be there to kind of like, you know, take the title. But I think, the most significant part is that Samsung has just dropped enough to become number two.
Who is Transsion?
Who is Transsion? So we have here a chart of basically the top five.
The top five listed of manufacturers are Apple with 20.1%, Samsung with 19.4% market share, Xiaomi with 12.5%, Oppo with 8.8%, which I assume includes OnePlus, right? Or is it Oppo by themselves? And
yeah,
then
that's
Good and question. Then transition, T-R-A-N-S-I-O-N. No,
it's not transition, it's Transsion.
Transsion Holdings is a Chinese manufacturer of mobile phones based in Shenzhen. It was the largest smartphone manufacturer by sales in Africa in 2017 and also sells mobile phones in the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and Latin America. That sounds like Techno.
Its brands includes such brands as iTel, Techno, and Infinix. So I made a joke about Techno, and there they are.
Good on y'all, Transsion.
Wow. 8%.
So what would you all's guesses be for the major reasons why Samsung has dropped, you know, so significantly in market share? What would your guesses be?
Ooh. Well, I know what IDC says.
What did IDC say, Jason?
Which sounds pretty accurate. They noted the comeback of Huawei in China. They noted, the Honor, OnePlus, Google being actually competitive in the lower high end, which we still have to like find a name for the lower high end. Is it the lower high end? Is it the minimal premium? I don't know what it is, but anyways. So that's what IDC attributes this as. But when you look at Samsung coming in second at 19.4%, that's a 13.6% decline from the previous year. That is huge when you're talking these numbers Samsung. And you look like, year after year, what you're looking at here. That's a crazy, crazy drop. Well, wait a minute. No, hold on. This chart's saying something different, though. That was from a different part of the article, and it said 13.6. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Well, no. Okay. So
it's
here,
it's a big drop, though.
Math is hard. Math.
Well, no. So this says Samsung 2023 market share 19.4%, 2022 market share 21%. So that really only seems like a couple, but then they're saying that the growth. So what is the growth? Because that is negative 13.6%.
I'm guessing that's shipments. So if you go from 262.2 million shipments to 220.
That's fair. 35 is about 16% of 20.
Math is hard. Transsion went up 30%.
That's pretty.
But I guess that makes sense with Huawei kind of coming back. In that, I would assume the Chinese market has more of an appetite for domestic phones, and with Huawei kind of coming back, that makes a lot of sense. Though it is interesting to note that with Huawei coming back, Xiaomi and Oppo did see drops as well in units shipped. So it's kind of hard, especially it's hard to compare. Android being the ecosystem it is with multiple OEMs to obviously the other side has just one. So it's always going to be kind of like, I guess in the zero sum game in terms of like Android share, it's always going to be like, you know, all of the OEMs kind of like jostling and tussling for space.
I should also throw this on the screen here because I kind of have this reaction too. Cousin of Jaw said, I'm kind of shocked. I always thought Apple was only the king in the U.S. Like, that's been the narrative. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, in the U.S., Apple is really, really popular. But you go out to other markets, and Apple's not nearly as popular. But, I mean, these numbers seem, on the surface, to prove otherwise.
They're still close to number one in Japan. They only just dropped down from number one to number two in Japan, but it's still a big part of the market. I think even Germany is iPhone's number one, and I want to say Sweden, but I think there's like a Schengen zone country where they are number one. And given that Germany and Japan are kind of like, are they number two and number three economies in the world? So that kind of makes sense. There's a lot of heavy lifting. So
I mean, it's really interesting because there's, I mean, say what you want about the iPhone SE, there really is no cheap iPhone version. I guess the iPhone SE could be considered like an entry level, but I mean, and I can't speak to overseas sales prices and whatnot. I can only speak to what that phone costs here, which is a lot more than what you can get a cheap Android phone for. So I mean, it's more like
mid-range price.
Yeah, it's definitely mid-range price.
$430.
Yeah. So you know, it's rather shocking when you consider the number of, you know, people whose only computing device is a smartphone. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, although I guess if you're going to make that argument, maybe the argument is to make, you know, put all your budget into, you know, a higher end phone so that you can get the most out of it. But yeah, it's very surprising. I kind of thought that Samsung, or at least some Android OEM, would hold that title for longer, but I guess that just goes to show it's Apple's world and we're all just living in it.
But by percentage points, I don't know. It's not such a bold position they're in now. It's 20 to 19, right? Like, it's literally like less than a percentage point. And like, we could very well see Samsung rebound in 24. Like, I feel like this is like going back and forth.
If Samsung was to, I don't know, have an announcement of a new device that might change the tide. I mean, maybe. Then, but you know, they're never going to do that. Yeah. Right.
And they're not going to have AI at all. Like, yeah, they're going to buck the trends of AI.
No way.
That seems like a good segue
to. It is a good segue because actually, you know, we are kind of bearing the lead a little bit in that tomorrow is Samsung's Galaxy Unpacked event. It is on at, I believe, 1 p.m. Eastern. Do the math. I'm so sorry. I can't do it for Pacific. That's like 10 a.m. Pacific. We're all, you know, waiting with bated breath for the announcement of the next S24 series. But thanks to Evan Blass over on Twix, at least for a little bit, not anymore. Evan did post some marketing images that gave us a little bit of a leaky peeky into what would be announced tomorrow. Some of the most notable things is that Samsung might be following Google's lead in offering 7 years of Android updates. Of course, one of the big things from the Pixel event this year was a resounding, or astounding rather, 7 years of updates for the Pixel 8. Well, guess what? Samsung could be like, well, hold my... Not my beer. Hold my smartwatch. Hold my
Bixby.
Hold my Bixby. Some reports are claiming that this would be not just 7 years of major updates, but also security patches as well. And of course, there's going to be AI. I mean, like, really, like, really. I mean, is that a surprise now? What is notable, though, is that the marketing images did indicate that Galaxy AI features will be free through 2025, which seems to imply that at some point they won't be free, possibly foreshadowing subscription-based AI features. Maybe. I don't know. AI.
Good luck with that.
I know. Subscription in general. Subscription AI features would... I don't know.
Well, I mean, they're, you know, all the AI services are doing this, right? Like, they give you a piece for free, and then if you want to, you know, get kind of unlimited access to this stuff, they charge you for it.
Oh dear,
I don't understand what they'd be charging for, because
I don't either.
I was at, you know, Snapdragon Summit when they introduced the Snapdragon 8 Gen 3, and all the, you know, the one of the big emphasis on the Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 announcement was, you know, this NPU that's going to do all this stuff on device. So I'm like, I don't even know how they would justify a subscription service for the AI features that's all happening on your device. It seems like a heated seat subscription all over again. Yeah. If you follow that metaphor.
I guess we'll see how many AI features will be online only versus on device. I know on device was, as you know, as alluded to, kind of a big deal for Google, but we'll see what happens with Samsung. And kind of maybe part of one of those features that we wonder whether we'll pay subscriptions for is something called Circle to Search, which is a rumored AI feature on Samsung, but powered by Google. And it sounds like just basically an upgrade of Google Lens, where you can, quote, circle, highlight, scribble, or tap to pinpoint what you're curious about. No screenshots necessary, end quote. And the marketing pictures had shown, you know, predictably an S Pen kind of like going around and like circling things and enabling Google Lens. So we'll see what that looks like. But that is a Samsung AI feature, but is powered by Google. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But Samsung Galaxy Unpacked.
Well, and speaking of that, so we won't. I'm not that I'm aware of. Jason, you're not doing any live coverage of Unpacked, right? Like none of we are not covering Unpacked live. I'm actually busy while it's going to be happening, so I can't be doing it. But But Jason or Wynn, if you're around watching it live, and if you want to write in the Discord for our patrons, you could potentially do that. But Wynn, you're going to be on Daily Tech News Show tomorrow, right, to talk about it?
I will. Not 3 hours after the event, I think. I will be on DTNS to talk to awesome. Tom and the crew about what's happened at Samsung Galaxy Unpacked. So it won't be quite live, but it'll be very, very close.
It'll be close to live. So
very close.
That's fun.
So go to twitch.tv/gooddayinternet tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern to see Wynn on DTNS. Or download it when it comes out of the podcast. That'd be great. And then also, as we mentioned, our good friend, co-host Michelle Rahman is going to be there live at the event. And he's going to be back on the show next week to tell us about all the things that he saw. But maybe for patrons, we'll have some bonus content for you later this week on Patreon, where you can get a sneak peek of his thoughts on what is going to be announced. So stay tuned to Patreon if you're a paying member. We're doing a lot more bonus content. So you want to do that, go to patreon.com/androidfaithful. But hey, if you've got any questions for Michelle leading into next week, either post them on Patreon or shoot us an email at contact@androidfaithful.com. That way Michelle can make sure he's asking the right questions or preparing anything for you for next week so we can get everybody's questions answered. So please do that. So it'll be big Samsung show next week, right? So
cool. I'd like to point out that your email address and URL at game are on point. So
yes,
well done.
Really, we've leveled up since Jason joined the team. It's fantastic. Yeah, so there it is. So, but yes.
Should I just leave this up there the whole time? Just to
you don't want it to burn in on the screen. You know, that's all. True. But all right, so moving on from Samsung. That said, not so great news coming out of Mountain View out of Google. Unfortunately, I will tell you, I am sick of hearing about layoffs. It has been mentally exhausting, and my heart goes out to people who are impacted by those layoffs, because Google had another round last week, and they've got another round going around this week too, which is just insane. I heard ad salespeople are getting hit this week. But last week, Google had layoffs in their hardware division, which was hit along with a restructuring announcement. And Semaphore followed with a report that the assistant team saw quote-unquote hundreds of layoffs. So the Google assistant team specifically was impacted last week. And so anybody who listens to the show or has listened to the show that works at Google that was involved in assistant or in hardware, we feel for you. We hope you land on your feet. It's never an easy thing to go through. But as if layoffs wasn't enough, Google then followed up announcing that 17 quote-unquote underutilized features were being removed from assistant, which this whole thing cracked me up.
By whom?
Yeah, right. This whole cracked me up. Like, not only the fact that they're removing features from Assistant, but felt the need to communicate and detail the 17 features that would be removed. And some of them are so mundane and bizarre. Like, it's so, I don't understand this at all. But so basically, no more media alarms, no more in Assistant, no more rescheduling events in your calendar via Assistant, even getting rid of step-by-step recipes on the hub, which was a launch feature, if I remember correctly.
That's my memory, but
it never worked that well, but anyway,
So
they should have made it work well then.
Yeah, using your voice to broadcast a message to your Google Family group, although you can still broadcast to devices.
Yeah, when I first read this one, I was like, you gotta be kidding, because
you use that, right, Jason? You use that a lot.
I use it to broadcast devices to the devices in the home, but I don't really use it tied to a Google Family group. Or I don't know what the difference is, to be honest, but I know that I can have done it, you know, many times just broadcasting to devices.
And then the one that the whole list is up. It's been covered on various blogs. It's on Google's blog as well, and in their support section, you can see all the individual things.
You can't ask to meditate with Calm anymore.
I mean, that has
I'm
all.
I'm so infuriated. I need a meditation to calm down.
That has all the earmarks of a partnership came to an end.
Yes.
I love how they're
it should have a TM next to it.
Yeah, exactly. Their alternative is you can still ask for meditation options with media providers such as YouTube. So the full list of all the 17 features that are there are out there. You can go find it. You can see what you can't do. But the big one that I was kind of shocked by was that they're removing the microphone in the Google search bar on Android phones, which in the assistant.
Where is that?
They're removing the microphone, so you cannot talk to Assistant. Yeah,
Pixel Launch are losing the Google Assistant microphone.
I know. I use it too. I don't understand that.
Yep. So my big question here, and a lot of the users upon this news reacted similar to Adam with what the hell? And now people are asking, like, what resources were spent supporting those features? Aren't those things that you just build and then they go? Or, you know, and like, you know, was the stopwatch really putting that much of a strain on resources that they cut it? But my bigger picture question is that this seems like a positioning move. And that they're clearing out any tech debt or any partnership debt like Calm or stuff like that. Maybe they've got data on what people are using or not using, and they're making it more streamlined. But like, this feels like a setting the table for a future thing. And I want to know, now I'm waiting to hear, what are we going to get because of all these cuts? What is this leading towards? Why cut the microphone from that? You know, my hope is that this is going to lead to they're changing the interface with Assistant or Bard, or somehow Bard is going to get involved, or like who knows? Two words,
and they also happen to be letters. A, I.
There it is. Yeah,
that's probably they're you know, Google is obviously really doing what every other company, you know, tech company in the world is doing right now, and they're dropping any of their roadmap and focusing entirely on AI, because if you aren't there in 2024, then you're nowhere, I think, is how they all feel, you know.
Well, I mean, going back to some of these features though, you want to know why people aren't using them? Because nobody knew they existed. Like using what was it? It was towards the top. Using media alarms, music alarms, or radio alarms. I didn't know you could do that.
Yep.
Like, the discoverability is a problem, folks. And no one's going to use features if they can't discover them.
Yeah.
So, oh man, that's so.
So do you think that the assistant as a whole and the product the way it exists now is it's more feature complicated or feature rich than users need? Like, that's what it sounds like, right? Like it's a multi-layered onion of things that a lot of people don't even know
that
they can do with
years
it.
Ago.
Yeah.
I feel like this has been an issue for a really long time, that Assistant offered so many features and that was a selling point. But then from the user perspective, it's like, I don't even know where to begin. Like, I got to know that that exists, and then I got to know the syntax in order to call it up, and then I got to use it a handful of times to like ingrain it in my brain to use it in the future. And like, most users just aren't spending that much time. That's why people just use these things for like weather and play this song, you know, because that's
weather
really
and
easy
timers.
To remember.
Weather, timers, and lights. That's the entirety. And like, you know what? I've actually switched to the other popular assistant that I'm not going to say because I don't want to trigger, you know, a thousand devices.
It's Bixby, right?
That's the one, definitely. I've actually switched to using Amazon service because honestly, it's faster. Like my co-host Cliff and I did a kind of a speed test on a few routines between Google Assistant and Amazon's assistant, and Amazon beat it like hands down every time. It wasn't even close.
And just to reinforce something that Ron said, that even if something is a simple feature and it feels like a one and done, like stopwatch or something, that just feels like, why would you have to, you know, ever improve on that? If something exists in your code base, it's going to have tech debt on it, even if it's really simple. Maintenance, making sure that you don't break it. And if you ever want to pivot and make something lighter, better, faster, it's still a thing that you need to move. So I totally get it. Like, why take away something that shouldn't be that difficult to maintain? But it's not nothing.
Everything has a weight. Everything has a cost.
That makes sense. And I mean, you know, there was that that push, I don't know how many years ago at this point, where I feel like you had to go to a website for Google Assistant to see all of the things it could do. And I mean, it was blindingly huge. The list. Yeah. And like, your eyes kind of glaze over. And, you know, again, it goes back to the point, like, on one hand, yay, that's a lot of features it can do. But on the other hand, like, it's too complicated.
You're never going to do half of it.
Yeah.
You're not. And I think that, you know, part of the reason that Google and other companies are going all in on AI is because they've figured, or at least the current iteration of AI, is because they've realized that there is a better way to do all these things and not require certain specificity and like the syntax. Right. And the approach on the user's side. Suddenly these things are becoming a lot more user-focused or user-able for people who aren't technology nerds. And that's really appealing, because then suddenly they've got way more opportunities for lock-in and all these other things that are going to make them gobs of money. So, so that's where we're at.
Oh, well.
Moving on from the assistant, we've got Android 15.
Not mad at all.
Or sorry, not Android 15th. It's not the 15th of Android. That's an entirely different time and place. Android 15, the floodgates are apparently open because last week we talked a little bit about Android 15. So I think every week now we're going to have little pieces of information about it. Last week it was voice activation. This week, Michelle wrote for Android Authority about the possible return of widgets to the lock screen. Can you believe that it's been since, what was it, Android 5 Lollipop was when we last had widgets on the lock screen. Oops, I removed
myself. Really? That's crazy.
And apparently they're coming back. And Michelle said that this evidence can be found in the Android 14 QPR 2 beta that is pointing to a return of this. There might be a very specific way in how it's executed. It might have an allow list, so only certain apps are allowed to do it. You'd have to like swipe inward from the right on the lock screen to reveal what they call the communal space, the widget space. That's what it's referred to in the code anyways. But there you go. And then there's also the fact that iPhone brought widgets to its lock screen, iOS 16, and you know, it's the push and pull of mobile, right? Like Google did it and they were first to it and we can all applaud Google for that, but then Google stopped doing it and then Apple did it and now Google's doing it again, you know? So it's like,
right,
you should just stayed with it anyways.
So what widget are you missing from your lock screen that you wish was there?
That's a good question. I don't know what widget I put on my lock screen, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because didn't Google move away from widgets on the lock screen partially for the whole privacy and security thing?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if you got widgets on your lock screen, then you're letting people into the experience, bypassing any of the lock security. And, you know, that's...
Well, I mean, I'm not going to put my work email widget on the lock screen, but you know, weather, that'd be nice. You know, I wouldn't put a calendar on a lock screen.
Media controls, like
media controls,
podcast
definitely.
Player, like I gotta imagine they're gonna have a very specific feature set or functionality set that it will work with in order for this to happen, and that's you know, and that said, it is so early. I mean, Michelle's poking around QPR 14 QPR, and we're hearing little things with 15. It might not even make the cut, so
we'll see. That's always a consideration. Just because it's here today doesn't mean it'll be there tomorrow.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I mean, they're trying to like bring face unlock back. They've got like watch to unlock back, so you don't actually stay on your lock screen that long. So
that's true. Half the time, my lock screen disappears before I actually see what's on it.
That's weird. Although I can do that neat cinematic photo treatment to my lock screen wallpaper now. I did that on my tablet. It makes my family go, ooh. Yes. And they move around cinematically. All right. Well, we'll see about that. But one last bit of news about Android. They actually had a big announcement over at CES that was a big reveal.
The hugest announcement ever.
The Android Bug Droid. Which got a redesign a couple months ago, they revealed its name. You know, we've called it, you call it the droid, the little bug droid, the Android guy. Its official name is The Bot.
The Bot.
That's it. The Bot. B-O-T.
I was at that media event, and I do not remember them saying that, but I'm going to go with it.
All right, there you go. So, The
Some
Bot.
Deep cut lore for you there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Let's move on.
All right, well, we're going to move on to our patron pick of the week. So every week on Monday at 12 p.m. Eastern, we put up 3 stories for our lovely patrons to vote on and pick the one that we talk about as a group. And so patrons like Michael O'Hara from Texas got to vote on 3 stories this week. And the ones that didn't win, that y'all didn't want to hear about, at least our patrons didn't want to hear about, the lowest actually was pretty close in third place, second and third place. But the loser this week, the ultimate loser this week was Threads will allow you to follow Mastodon users. So I guess Fediverse not getting too much love, but that got 27% of the vote.
That's neat, though. That's cool.
It is neat. And it
delivers on a promise.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So 28%, and I really was hoping that more of you be interested just from a, I don't know, socioeconomic, political standpoint. Google wants more gambling apps in the Play Store. Ooh, that would have been a great discussion, but that only got...
Would have been a nice CES tie-in.
True, very true. But unfortunately, 28% of you only voted for that. But the winner with 45% this week is Google Messages is working on selfie gifts. And I know
love the messages. My goodness.
You love messages, stories. and messages features and Google Messages continuing just like the feature rollout train that they've been doing for like the last year now of just adding all kinds of stuff in. This current feature is still hidden, but was found by, you know, of course, Assemble Debug, you know, always digging into the APKs and finding fun stuff. And basically this will allow you to long press the camera icon in Google Messages, and it will pop up a specialized viewfinder with a little, hey, ready for your close-up, Mr. DeVille, and allow you to kind of count down 3 seconds and then recreate a short video that will be converted to a GIF that you can then insert into your Google Messages.
Okay.
There you go. That's a selfie GIF, a GIFsy, a GIF self-GIF.
So it's like a GIF reaction of you?
Yeah, a GIF reaction. It's not too unlike the custom, wasn't there like a, we covered like a pet reactions or something like a month ago? There you go.
I don't recall that.
You and your pets can just react to stuff in messages.
I really want to see when this rolls out, how many people actually use it. I'd be curious. I don't know.
Like twice. And
so that we can read about it. So we can read about it being retired a year from
exactly.
now.
Yeah, exactly. It was killed by Google when you need it, right?
So jaded.
Yeah. So.
Oh, man.
But, and Jason's going to be like, I did that all the time.
I will say that somebody on Patreon commented on this saying there's always a messaging story and I have no interest. And I just laughed. I'm sorry, sir. Brian commented. He said, ugh, almost every poll has a messages related story. Zero interest.
Well, it is interesting because they keep winning.
I got to tell you, messages and weather are the two always win, right, Wynn?
Yes, they do. And I always hesitate to suggest them, but some of y'all want them and some of y'all really don't. So
how about this? Next week, there will be no message related patron pick. For those of you who not care about messages.
I mean.
However, there will be three weather related.
Let's make sure we make a note of that, Jason, because in a week from now, I could very easily forget that you said that on the show.
I'll remember.
All right.
Yeah, we really appreciate the feedback, too, on what you all do and do not want to hear about and vote on. So either way, we really appreciate it.
You're heard, Brian. Don't worry.
Yes, you are. Very much so. We appreciate it.
Yeah, go to patreon.com/AndroidFaithful, sign up, and you can vote every week. So that's awesome. So cool.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Love All it. Right. Should we get into some hardware? This is the hardest of hardware, actually, because initially, Michal, I think, was going to be able to join tonight.
Right.
But he could not because he is en route, if not, you know, down where the Samsung event is going to be held. So he's going to be on the scene for that. But we did get a chance to chat with Michal yesterday. So we actually had a pretty lengthy conversation with him. We're not going to play the full conversation here. We're going to play a part of it. And then if you want to watch the rest, well, hey, patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. It's some of our bonus content for you. But Why don't we check out this kind of chat with Michal from yesterday about some of the things that he really wanted to discuss from the Consumer Electronics Show.
All right. So we are here with Michal, who unfortunately couldn't join us for the regular show this week, but is able to give us some time to talk about his adventures in Vegas. Michal, did the bail money get through to you in time?
Thanks for the offer, Rod, but I did not need to request any money from you all. Thank you.
This time.
Let's give it. You took notes for next year, right, Michal?
Absolutely.
So, all right, cool. Well, so we wanted to make sure that you had some time to tell us about some of the cool stuff you saw at CES. So what's first up on the docket?
So first up, I mean, the Consumer Electronics Show obviously encompasses much more than just mobile tech. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of mobile tech to be found in CES every year. Most of it has to deal with the way you interact with your other devices in your connected home, such as your smart speakers, your displays, your TVs, your fridges, your ovens, and everything, and so on and so forth. But there were a couple of mobile-related announcements. The biggest one, I would say, would be the ROG Phone 8, or as Ron likes to say, the ROG Phone 8.
ROG till I die, wrong. My friend. ROG.
I say ROG. I'll be honest. I say ROG privately because it's just easier to say, but it's officially the ROG Phone 8.
Yep. You just outed yourself, though. So
is it true, Michal, that this phone is beyond gaming now? Because that's what their website is telling me.
I definitely think that they are shifting away from being just a pure gaming first, gaming only handheld. Like they've made a lot of improvements that make this feel more just like a phone for regular users that's also really good for gaming. So one of the things I immediately noticed when I picked it up is, wow, this is so much lighter and easier to hold than the previous models. Like the previous models had really sharp edges. It was very boxy. This one had kind of rounder, smoother edges. It was lighter. It was much easier to hold. It also had additional features that people might have been missing in earlier generations, such as wireless charging, finally. And also has an IP68 rating. So like these are two features that you might want in a regular smartphone, but you know, ROG kind of just, you don't really need wireless charging for a gaming phone. You know, you just need fast wire charging. You don't really need waterproof for a regular gaming phone, right? But now we have these features that you would consider basic for flagship phones. And now it's in the ROG phone as well. And you still have a bunch of the gaming centric features such as the air triggers for like inputting certain taps on the sides of the screen. You still have the controller support. You still have the, of course, the gamer-esque RGB logo on the back if you have the regular ROG Phone 8. And then you also have this LED display on the back, the dot matrix display. I think it's actually mini. Some LED display on the back of the Pro and the Pro Edition. And you also have much improved cameras. You have a 50 megapixel, I think. I forgot. Is it 50 megapixel camera?
My memory.
And then also, oh, sorry. Yeah. And then you also finally have a telephoto camera, 3x optical zoom telephoto camera. So a lot of features that everyone has been asking for. You know, I want to use my ROG phone as a regular phone for everything. And now you can. Like there's barely any compromises in that regard in terms of specs.
It does seem like it's a maturity of the Republic of Gaming, as if, you know, they've ratified the Constitution, and now they have an entire infrastructure to worry about. And in addition to gaming, you also have to pay your bills on the phone, right? So
yeah.
I guess what I'm wondering here is, in the broadening out of the appeal of this device, is it? And I don't know that you would, if you would have the answer to this, or maybe you asked, you know, them questions while you were there about this, but is this a sign that the gaming phone focus wasn't working? Or is this a sign that, yeah, we've kept all the gaming stuff that you have come to expect and we've made it more accessible? In other words, like, are they trimming back, like cutting back on the game focused phone thing that was largely the reason for this phone's existence for many years, or are they adding more general appeal to it? Does that make sense?
So I didn't get a chance to ask kind of like the deep philosophy behind why they're making so many of these changes. Mm-hmm. I do kind of get the sense that they were kind of backing themselves into a corner with the niche they were targeting, right? There's only so many people who game on mobile.
Precisely.
Versus a lot of people who might occasionally game and still want some of those features. So like they're trying to broaden their horizons. And like a lot of the features they used to be adding like were extremely niche. Like maybe only a couple of gamers would take advantage of them. Versus like now they still have a lot of those features that might be useful for the average gamer, like the tap, the triggers, and a lot of the features that are built into Game Genie and the cooling stuff like that. But like they're not focusing on that aspect anymore. They have the marquee gaming features, but they're also now trying to broaden the horizons and trying to get people who don't consider themselves hardcore mobile gamers.
Do you think it's fair that maybe some of the, I mean, it still seems like there might be something there for hardcore gamers in some of the accessories that might be available for the ROG 8, like, you know, but yeah, like, is that maybe like how they're still going to keep, I mean, it's still called the Republic of Gamers.
They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. When I know exactly what you're talking about, because like they and I was scrolling through their website, they have this like Snap-on cooler thing.
Aero cooler,
which is like straight up in like, you're a gamer, you're going to be pushing your processor to the limit, you've got to cool your phone down. But like when you're not playing the game, you snap it off and then you can go take awesome pictures with the camera system and use it as a regular phone. Like I think Michelle, I think you're right. I think they're trying to toe the line between keeping their loyal audience, you know, kind of savvy, but maybe I'm a normal user who's curious about a gaming phone, right? And this is a way to go to it. So
yeah, and speaking of the accessories, there's actually an interesting change they've made in this year's controller accessory that comes, or it doesn't come with the ROG phone, but it can be purchased separately. This year, the ROG Tessen mobile controller is a new gaming controller that's not only compatible with the ROG phone, but it's also compatible with all Android devices that have a USB-C port. So the Kunai gaming controllers used to be only available for the ROG phone. But this one is, you know, as I said, can be compatible with any phone that has a USB-C port. And one of the cool things about it that I noticed is you can actually fold it up fully. Like you can fold it up three times. So it's like very thin and compact. And that's something that I haven't seen very many controllers do. Because like I have a GameSir X2. It's a very sturdy controller that works with a lot of different devices. But it just takes up a lot of back space. And it's just not portable at all. Yeah, but this thing not only can be folded up, but it also feels really good. Like the construction was very sturdy and it had, you know, the usual gaming support, all the buttons that you expect. Sticks felt great. The shoulder buttons felt pretty good. And if you do use this with Asus or an ROG phone, you do get the additional features such as you're able to map touch inputs onto touchscreen like taps, which is not something you're natively able to do in Android without the use of a third-party app, which is a bit of a hacky workaround. But it's very nice to see this controller being made, and I would consider picking one up. Like, it gets really compact.
I really like that, because even as someone who has a Steam Deck, and my husband has a Steam Deck, even though nominally it's very portable, it's still a whole other device that is not small. And I think that's, you know, like, not to complain, for this very first world problems about complaining the Steam Deck is hard to carry around with all of our Christmas gear. But I do think this is actually very intriguing, and to get people who are maybe gamer curious or just maybe like more like casual gamers into this form factor that is very popular. And yeah, like when you apply the test, and it does have that Nintendo Switch Steam Deck kind of landscape, but with like the controls on the side of the screen. I think it's actually a really smart idea to make that generally Android compatible to get people kind of into the space of handheld gaming as it is in 2024.
So that controller is going to cost, what is it going to be, Michelle? Isn't it like, it's like around $140 or so, or?
I don't have the pricing and availability information. Like, I looked at the press release, it wasn't mentioned there either.
Yeah, I don't think they announced. I don't think they announced. I saw some rumors pre-CES that saying it was expected between $139 and $159. So I guess the question is that whether or not you're a gamer, is that truly worth the cost or not? But it does look very, very cool.
If it's that high, that would be pretty pricey for this sort of device. Aren't these things usually sub $100?
Yeah, like I feel like $99 is a good cost for this, right? So
yeah,
we'll see. Yeah. We will see.
Interesting.
So cool. So that's the report from the Republic of Gaming. Thank you. I'm glad you got through customs.
You got your passport stamped, I hope, while you pass through.
Michelle, what else were you able to see at CES?
So like I did mention earlier, there's not a lot of mobile-related announcements, and Samsung this year also did not have a lot of mobile-specific announcements, but if you're really into the SmartThings ecosystem, you know, there's a lot of ways where you can treat your smartphone as the hub to control all your devices. And one thing I really appreciated walking around their showroom floor on at CES is that just the sheer scale of the Samsung ecosystem and how crazy interconnected it is. Like, obviously, like, they showed off on a lot of new TVs, but they also had like new ovens, new washing machines, dryers, and everything is SmartThings integrated. Like on their refrigerator, you basically have a giant Android tablet mounted to the front of it, mm-hmm. and it runs full-fledged Android apps. And also, you have SmartThings integration onto it. So if you get a call on your phone, you can quickly pick it up on your fridge or take a call on your oven, which has a small display on the front. Just the crazy amount of integrations that Samsung showed off. But on the visual display side of things, like if you were looking at, you know, all these new TVs, these 8K TVs, these super high-end, expensive mini LED TVs, you're like, why should I care about any of the stuff they're announcing, right? This is kind of one of those things you have to really see to understand. And if I was not there, I would not really get why these new displays and things are being announced. Like, why would I care about 8K, for example? And like, the kind of argument they're showing is that, sure, not a lot of content is being made for 8K right now, but even despite that, this new upscaling technology, the new upscaling chips that we have, are really good enough to where you could actually enjoy 1080p, even 720p content upscale all the way to 8K, and you get a appreciable boost in quality when you do that. And it's all powered by like a new upscaler chips and all that. There's also a whole bunch of other related features that you might not appreciate now, but you appreciate later. Like, I don't know if you have any of you have a TV that's in like a central living room and you have light anywhere that's coming into it. You realize how much the visual experience is degraded just by the light shining on the TV. You can see your own reflection. You can see the reflection of the light bulbs on the TV. They had this anti-glare coating that they're applying to the new OLED series this year that made a dramatic difference in reducing how much light was shown reflected back onto you. There's just so much tech related that you just kind of have to see to believe. And like, don't think about the price. If you think about the price, you're going to be like, I don't care about this anymore.
And that's the whole part of CES, which is like, some of it is like, we see, you know, product announcements, which we're going to talk about on the regular show. And we talked about on this episode and all that sort of stuff. But then also it's like, what is the future of tech coming? What is the, I mean, and I joked about it last week, I think, or the other week, we're saying how, you know, there's always the enormous TV that you can't buy now, but in 3 years is going to be the one in Costco. Right.
And so there'll be a more enormous one that year at CES. Yeah, it's always like 3 to 5 years in the future. You know, it's like you're seeing it now and it's ridiculously expensive. And that's kind of the beauty of actually going to the Consumer Electronics Show. You know, there's a lot of technology that's there that's never going to make it, but there's a lot of technology that's there that you know you're looking at some point in the future. Even though you see it now, that doesn't mean it's happening now for everyone, but it will happen someday. Like this anti-glare, you know, for large screens, like, come on, like that's kind of a no-brainer. At some point, these TVs that are that large are all going to have some sort of anti-glare protection, similar to what you saw there. It's just a matter of time.
And some of the other wild stuff that they showed off, actually, like that I really hope to see. I don't remember the name of it, but they have these, their Freestyle 2 projectors. They showed off this technology where, you know how, like, if you wanted the best visual experience when using a projector, you got to have it on a perfectly flat display or like a projector screen, right? Well, if you don't have a perfectly flat, you know, big area to display it, like they showed off this demo where they had this projector wrapped on like a corner of a wall, and it was like obviously very visually distorted, but they had this feature where it corrects for it, and it corrects for it really well to where it looks like even though you're projecting on this corner of a wall, it corrects it and it kind of looks like you're projecting onto a flat wall. It was really so cool.
That is awesome.
So overall, Michelle, thumbs up on CES. You had a good time?
Absolutely. Thumbs up.
Very cool. Well, thanks for giving us some of your time to break down kind of the big things you saw. But hey, there's more. Patrons of Android Faithful can head over to patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. And if you are a paying patron, you can get, we're going to have a little bit of bonus content of Michelle's adventure, some of the other cool stuff he saw at the show. So you definitely want to stay tuned and check that out. But in the meantime, we're going to get back to the episode. Thanks, Michelle. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you next week, man.
See ya.
And we're back.
I'm not jealous at all of anybody who went to CES, by the way. I'm not jealous at all.
That's good. That's good, because damn near killed me.
Well, Adam, well, we're dying to know, what was the coolest thing you saw at CES?
If I had to narrow it down, so am I limited to just Android stuff?
No. Anything. Overall, yeah.
Man, like, I keep coming back to this, and I don't want to keep going back to this well, but... So I went to go see a company called Brain. They make a portable speaker with an integrated with a built-in subwoofer, which in and of itself is not amazing, but just the sound that comes out of this thing is incredible. Like,
cool.
He did a side-by-side demo with a popular speaker manufacturer, and like, you know, here's ours and here's theirs, and like, I saw this demo done a couple of different times, and like, everybody that saw this demo, their face was just like, I mean, like,
how?
Could not believe that this was so. And there's a picture of the Brain on the screen there. This is about the size, actually, it's a little bit smaller, I think, than the subwoofer that I have for my computer speakers. But the difference is that this has a subwoofer that sounds just as good as my computer speakers, if not better. In fact, I'm going to say it sounds better. But that also contains the mid-range speakers and the high-end tweeters and a 12-hour battery. Like, it's just remarkable how they've miniaturized the subwoofer technology so that they can fit all of this into a very portable package. And I was honestly just blown away. I was blown away by the demo. And, I'm going to be reviewing it for Slash Gear, so I'll be able to try it out for myself. But, you know, it has a full IP rating. It's IP57. So you can put it out by the pool if you want. It's just ridiculous, cool, the amount of tech that they have in this thing.
Wow, I hadn't even heard about that. So I'm going to keep that on my radar. Yeah. Very cool. So,
yeah. And then, and as Cliff points out in the chat, I did get a few pairs of glasses while I was there. I have one pair here. These are called the Dusk sunglasses, which, hey, you know, I'm walking around inside, but I gotta go outside now. So, let's turn that off.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Those glasses dim themselves for our audio listeners.
Right.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
So, so my biggest complaint about audio sunglasses, and that's what these are audio sunglasses, is when I get in my car and I drive to Target, I'm listening to the Android Faithful podcast. When I get to Target, I want to keep listening to my podcast, so now I have a choice. I either have to stop listening to my podcast, or I have to be that guy walking around Target in my sunglasses, like, hey, everybody, I'm awesome, don't worry about me. But now I could just be like, oh, I'm inside, so boop, there's just regular glasses now, and I can just walk around and do things. So yeah, this is actually like the Gen 1 version of Dust. There's a Gen 2 that's coming out this summer that they're going to be kicking over my way, which, because like right now these are a little bit on the dark side, but the new Gen will be even clearer, which should be cool.
Cool.
And then the other pair of glasses that I got that Cliff was talking about is The Meta Ray-Bans. I picked up a set of those while I was there.
Dude, I was literally, as you were talking about those other glasses, I pulled up the Meta Ray-Bans to check the price because I really want, I think I want them. Are they cool? Do you like them, Adam? Or?
So I've only used them a little bit, but as I told Cliff, I think our social media game is going to be going to go up a few notches now, because they're pretty cool, and you know, the camera quality is pretty good. The only thing I don't like is that you're kind of limited to just Meta stuff, which, you know, duh. So like, I can share to Instagram, but I can't share to the TikToks or the YouTubes. Like,
right,
if I could stream to YouTube with these things, I would have bought a pair months ago.
Yeah.
Because they might have been the new Skippy, you don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those are pretty awesome. And then I actually have another pair of glasses coming from a company called Solos. And their deal is they have ChatGPT integrated into the sunglasses. So you can be like walking around and be like, hey, ChatGPT, I want to go to, you know, see the best football stadium in Chicago, and it'll tell me like how to get there. I don't know, whatever. Just I'll figure out a use case.
An AI assistant in your ear via the glasses. That seems pretty cool.
So, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So yeah, a lot of cool stuff. And then like one last little Android thing, and I'll make this quick. I sat down for a demo with Google for Google Duet, which is their enterprise version of Bard, basically. And I sat down, they said, they had a Google Sheet up in front of me, and they said, go ahead and type in a prompt. So I just start typing, and I'm typing, and one of the demo guys is like, whenever someone has a long prompt, I always like to come over and see what they're doing. And so I had Google Duet plan out a vacation for my wife and I to a city that's not too far from Chicago called Galena, Illinois. And I said, you know, I want to have a romantic dinner, and I want to visit at least 3 wineries, and I forget what the other prompt was. And it, like, came up with, like, a whole itinerary for, like, 3 days with, like, actual, like, I've eaten at that place, I know where that is, like, you know, actual places that exist, and it listed it, like, hour by hour. It was kind of cool. I was kind of excited by that. So I just thought it was a little fun little anecdote.
Well, it's funny because I did not go to CES as aforementioned, but I sure as hell pre-ordered one of those Rabbit AI devices as soon as I saw it because that demo blew me away. Even though I don't think it's running Android, although we'll find out what it's running. But it's, you know, basically the little Star Trek-y type device where you talk to it, and it seems like the next generation of interface away from smartphones. Instead of actually tapping and doing stuff, you're talking to the device. And one of the demos was plan me a vacation, and that shows how it plans it out. I don't think I would ever plan a vacation that way. I'm too anal when it comes to my travel planning, but it seemed very cool. And for $199, I was like, pre-order, do it, you know, like, yeah, I want to play with that guy. So I'll bring it on the show, Jason, when it comes in April. Love, I know it. It's a little outside of Android, but AI, it's hard to avoid that, right? So
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some Android in there somewhere, to be honest.
Yeah.
It, you know, because that's just kind of what runs things these days.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to trying that out myself.
Yep. Cool. Well, that's CES. And going back to glasses to do a little shameless plug, patrons, go to patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. We're going to publish that video tonight after the show airs. And you can see more of what Michelle saw at CES, including some glasses that have not been talked about on the show yet. So you will find out. So cool. All right.
But can they do this?
Adam, I want you to leave those glasses on and tell us about the OnePlus 12.
I will do that, sir.
Okay, you don't actually have to leave them on if you don't want to, but it'll make your like hands-on a lot cooler.
It might, or it might be nerdier. Who knows? So I can't get really too far into the device, just because I'm not allowed to yet, but. This, as my video intro showed, this is the OnePlus 12, and in a first for the OnePlus as a company, they are bringing the OnePlus 12R, which I do not have yet. They are bringing the OnePlus 12R to the U.S. market, so they're kind of positioning this as the flagship, and OnePlus told me they actively want people to compare this to the S24 Ultra. Like, that's their goal.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's ambition right there.
It sure is. And then the OnePlus 12R is OnePlus getting back to their flagship killer roots, which should be fun. Fun fact, I unboxed this phone on the Benefit of a Doubt YouTube channel. Link, I'm sure, probably in the show notes or something. Or maybe Cliff will drop it in the chat while we're talking. So this is... I pulled up some key specifications for you. We're running Android 14, which I can't show you. It's Snapdragon 8 Gen 3. This is going to come in a 12 or 16 gigabyte RAM configuration. Storage is going to be 256 or 512. There's an excuse me, in-screen fingerprint sensor. USB 3.2. The battery is a massive 5,400 milliamp hours. Supports 80-watt wired charging or 50-watt wireless charging. Hey, hey, hey.
Hey.
And yeah, that's, I mean, that's like most of the sexy stuff. NFC, yeah, display. A 6.82-inch display. So it is a big boy. Cameras on the back. 50-megapixel main camera. I don't know which one of those that is. And then there's a 48-megapixel ultra-wide camera, and then a 64-megapixel 3X optical periscope zoom lens, which is a very similar setup to the OnePlus Open, which I can tell you the cameras on this are phenomenal. So I would imagine that that DNA will carry over to the OnePlus 12. Yeah, video is 8K 24 FPS, 4K at 3060 FPS. You know, I think that's about it for like the sexy stuff. But yeah. And the phone is off right now because I can't show you what it looks like when it's on. And that's the phone.
It's a phone and it exists.
It is.
I feel like I'm at the same time both excited and enthused and anticlimatically let down.
Okay, right. What way?
Well, because I feel like coming off of the high of the OnePlus Open and like that you know, really, and Adam, I think you and I think we're in agreement that the OnePlus Open was the phone of the year 2023, right?
Best phone of the year, favorite phone I've ever reviewed.
Yeah, so like the OnePlus 12, it's like, well, it's just a phone. It's got the same camera as the Open. It doesn't fold. I don't know. Just
that's legit. That is legit. I can say that the software is a little shit. What am I allowed to say? I don't know. I like the software a little bit better than the OnePlus Open, because the OnePlus Open is like one of my key pain points on the OnePlus Open is that it's locked to the the four columns of icons. So that's not the case on the OnePlus 12. Shoot, I don't know. I better not say anything else.
Yeah, no, we don't want you to step. We don't want you to step on foul.
But anyway,
I like the colorway. I will say I like the colorway.
Yeah. So
it's worked for them in the past.
Yeah. It has kind of like a kitchen counter kind of look to it. It's like a marble look to it.
Yeah.
So this is the green, and they have an ebony version as well, if I remember correctly.
That's great.
Don't sleep on this phone, because I know this is, the reviews are going to be dropping for this probably a little right around the same time as the S24 Ultra. I don't know what, I am not reviewing that phone, so I don't know what the embargo is or anything like that. But this phone's going to be dropping right around the same time. Do not sleep on this phone, because, I mean, if the OnePlus Open is any indication, and actually the OnePlus 11 was a very, very good phone. This is going to be possibly the phone to beat for 2024. I mean,
it's January 16th, everyone.
January 16th.
It's 2 weeks in, and Adam is making a bold prediction.
And Samsung has its announcement tomorrow.
Right. But you know what? This is an informed opinion, folks.
I trust you. So
don't sleep on this phone. This is going to be a trip.
I will say one thing that's going through my mind, and I don't know why it's occupying mind space right now, but you mentioned you compared something to the kitchen counter, and I was wondering if we'll ever see a Formica phone.
That'd be
pretty cool phone, like crafted out of etched Formica.
Yeah, I mean, we've had wood phones, we've had leather phones, so why not Formica?
Why not Formica?
And we've had Macadial.
I know, exactly. See, Formica is just waiting in the wings, waiting for its moment, the Formica phone. It sounds good.
This is kind of Macadial-ish, I see, you know. But
cool.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
Right on.
Well, I'm enjoying the OnePlusissance that we're going through right now. OnePlusissance. I think that, you know, like I'm every time I see something coming from OnePlus, I'm excited again. And I feel like it's been a while since we've had that. So
nice.
Yeah.
Cool. I still have not got my hand on the the Fold or the Open. Sorry, the Open.
The Open.
Yeah.
The Open is a damn fine phone. Actually, it was my companion phone to the iPhone that I was carrying around at CES. That, along with the Pixel 8 Pro, which I used predominantly for like recording interviews and stuff because of the live transcription and stuff,
yes,
like that.
Of course.
So, you know, the OnePlus Open was a great phone for like checking out my schedule and seeing like where I had to go. But I know a lot of people that would normally have already switched back to a different foldable that are still carrying the OnePlus Open because it is such a good phone. And that arguably continues into the OnePlus 12.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. All right. Very cool. Well, thank you, Adam, for bringing the show and tell. I can't wait to check it out myself.
Yeah, I wish I had the 12R, but it's being shipped as we speak.
All right. So there it is. In the bitter cold that we're going through right now.
Indeed.
So one last little bit of hardware from CES, which is near and dear to my heart. Our good friends at AA Wireless were at the show, showing off the AA Wireless 2, part deux, if you're following along. It's mostly, and for those who might not remember, didn't watch All About Android, AA Wireless was the little dongle that kicked off the revolution of Android Auto wirelessly in the car. I feel it was 2 years ago AA Wireless 1 came out, maybe two plus years ago. I jumped on the Indiegogo, got the first rev of it, the little hockey puck version of it. Love the fact that it could use Android Auto in my car wirelessly up until the USB connectors in my car broke, and now I haven't been able to use anything, but I'm getting that fixed. But they're back with AA Wireless 2. This is mainly, the functionality is generally the same. It's mainly a hardware revision. Folks who are watching our video show can see the difference. The version 1 puck is on the right, is a little square, kind of hockey puck style, and the new version is a little sleeker, it's a little thinner, it's more rectangular, it's got a neat little blue light button, a little more curvier, and that button is a multifunction button that helps with pairing and switching between devices, which I gotta admit, after using the initial first version, the lack of a physical button was frustrating. Yeah. So I'm glad to see they brought that out there. It's gonna be released later this year, no price as of yet, but if you're on the fence about it, they are great. This team is kicking butt in terms of bringing wireless connectivity to Android Auto to cars, so I would definitely encourage you to check it out.
Sweet.
It was such a cool idea. Motorola ripped it off.
Yep, exactly.
That's how you know you got a good one. Someone rips it off.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. No question. So that's going to wrap up our hardware chatting.
Yeah, well, we can start off some app news with some little more transportation driving related news. And you might be, if you're a fan of Waze, know that when it comes to using Google Maps in a tunnel, you might have to worry unless you have been able to make use of Waze's beacon program. So Waze for a long time in tunnels have used Bluetooth beacons to kind of continue to provide you directions and navigation, even while, you know, the GPS is not working because you're, you know, probably in a concrete tube. And this beacon program is pretty widespread. They've got, you know, beacons in major cities across the world, New York City, Chicago, Paris, Brussels, apparently have like 18 kilometers worth of tunnel beacons in Australia. But it only really worked in Waze. And it's kind of odd since, you know, Google has owned Waze since, 2013? But now Google Maps is starting to support the Bluetooth beacons from the Waze program. You can view it in a new tunnel navigation setting. You just go to your Google Maps, go to settings, navigation settings, and driving options. This is disabled by default. My bad. The opposite is disabled by default. But if you want those nice Bluetooth tunnel beacons, go and check that out in your Google Maps, settings. Should help you with more seamless navigation while underground. Try some. And I do think, actually, then the feature, by the way, is not available on Google Maps for iOS.
This is where we all make noises. I did not know these Bluetooth beacons existed, and now I'm completely like tin hat, like stop tracking me for whatever reason. And I only go through one tunnel in the Midtown Tunnel to New York.
That's the only tunnel. Too late, Ron. They've been tracking you for years. They already know everything about.
Did you guys know about these Bluetooth beacons?
I did not.
And that's something you probably know about it. Like it's in the geocaching world, right?
This was kind of news to me actually, and the fact that Waze has had this going for a while. Yeah, no, this was total news to me.
Yeah, and tons of them. I mean, like major cities. It's cool and creepy.
I will say the number of times I have told people not to use Waze or Google Maps in the New York City metro area, like recently, is like more than I would. It's like keeps coming up. I'm like, oh yeah, don't use that, because for whatever reason, both Waze and Google Maps behave as if they've never been to New York. in the ways that they tell you, like I'll type put in the direction. I'm like, why are they going that way? And I'll drive it, right? Like I'll be like, well, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. You know, they know the benefit of the doubt. It knows what it's doing. But after being born and raised in the New York metro area, knowing these parkways like the back of my hands, 9 times out of 10, they are bad directions. So,
isn't that everybody though? Like I get directions in my hometown and I'm just like, why are you sending me there? There is a roundabout that Google Maps is absolutely in love with about 5 miles from my house. That like if you're going anywhere near this roundabout, it will take you through that roundabout. And I have no idea why, but
I will say I do love a good roundabout, by the way. I will just drive a roundabout in circles.
It's funny.
Parliament.
my husband went to high school in a one light town in North Dakota, and when he took me, it was no longer a one light town; it was a one roundabout town. It was like a big deal for that roundabout to go in.
So they didn't even have a light anymore; they just had a roundabout.
And Main Street was like two seconds long. He's like, "Okay, we're going down Main Street." That's it.
Main Street is the roundabout.
I will give my kids credit. We drove through a roundabout and they were about 4 at the time and they had the appropriate reaction. They're like, "Whoa, circles!" Like they even picked up on the fact that we were going in a circle. So.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's great. Let's just stay on it for 5 minutes.
Now I'm wondering, my son's a driver now. I wonder if I've ever actually taken him through a roundabout, and I don't know that I have, and that's something I probably should do sometime soon.
Probably, yeah. It can be kind of first few times. Like, what do I do?
Turn left on the roundabout. Yes, that must be what I do. Exactly what you don't do. Yeah. All right. Speaking of roundabouts, you could do a roundabout with your hand while wearing a smartwatch, and it would act as if it were a mouse.
I was just watching this. This is interesting.
I love this so much, by the way. This might vindicate the Pixel Watch for me.
Yeah, well, just don't get too far ahead of your skis there, Ron. There is an asterisk that involves the Pixel Watch. But anyways, Double Point is the name of the company. Wow Mouse is the name of the product. It was introed at the Consumer Electronics Show. So you could have done this. You could have seen this, Adam. Maybe you did.
I know.
Just, you wanted to keep a secret.
I did kind of. Get through your story and I'll tell you my part of it.
Okay, all right. So what does it do? It turns Android smartwatches, asterisk, into gesture-based Bluetooth mice. So you can wave your arms to move a mouse on like a Windows, Linux, Mac OS, iPad OS. You pinch to click. So it's that kind of motion, right? It works on some Wear OS devices. Galaxy Watch 4 through 6 is what I specifically read, not without bugs on the Pixel Watch. So maybe that means it will work eventually. They're working on it. They're ironing out the kinks. But for right now, you don't want to get a Pixel Watch for the Wow Mouse because you're not going to have a good day. And apparently it does all of this via Bluetooth HID, which stands for Human Interface Devices. Something, by the way, the Apple Watch cannot do.
Well, now, wait. Because I went to go see a company called Mudra Bands that actually does this with an Apple Watch. But
not like this.
No, so I don't know. Like, I'm curious as to, like, what hardware is involved
I don't know.
do this, because there's not a whole lot here in the story about, because Mudra Band, like, broke it all down. They're using, like, biometric sensors. And the band is, like, really thick. I mean, it's not subtle. And this is just a watch band that you add to your Apple Watch. But yeah, basically the same thing is you can do the Wingardium Leviosa thing and move your cursor around and you know, click and, you know, pull back things and do Minority Report stuff. You know?
I feel like we covered some input last year on AAA where I distinctly remember like pinch to click, but I don't remember whether it was what you mentioned, Adam, or something else. Like, hold on, I'm going to Google now. I just brought that up and I have no receipts.
I don't know, this sort of innovation in interface, similar to the Rabbit P1, which is why I got so, like, I want to see the next gen interfaces, right? I want to see how do these devices allow us to interact with computers and devices in different ways? And the idea that you're wearing a smartwatch, which is tracking your, and like, why can't you use it as a controller? I think that's awesome. Right. I want to be crazy using my computer and my phone with hand gestures and things like that. Like, I think that's super cool and Star Trek-y, and I'm all about it. So
go ahead.
I was gonna say, wait until you get in the train with 3 dozen people doing the same thing and everybody.
True. Oh, right. Awesome. No, and they're all controlling each other's devices too. No, what I'm super interested in though is, like, I've been giving this a lot of thought because, you know, obviously Mudra left an impression on me. I've been giving this a lot of thought, like, when would I want to actually do this? And what I keep coming back to is the one demo that they showed me was not controlling like a computer or a tablet, but controlling your Apple TV. Like, if you're thinking about it, you're sitting on the couch, you don't need a remote control anymore. You just like do that, and then there's your user interface, and now I want to pick that movie and I want to watch that, and I'm going to scrub it back, and you know, that's the Yahtzee.
Yeah, it is the 21st century equivalent of the clapper to turn your lights on and off.
Well, right? I was just clapping.
I mean, clap on, clap off.
sometimes, Adam, though, you just want to be reclining with a lazy hand in your lap. And a you know, a piece of technology there. Then all you have to do is go like this.
Jason, can I tell you, by the way, I was recently lounging on my couch with a piece of technology in my hand, the Google TV Chromecast remote, and that thing is so tiny, the number of times it slips out of my hand and falls out. like I need a more, I need a remote to go, like a case to go, that, put that remote in, like a bumper to get a little more.
But I mean, here's the thing, like when you're working on a computer, you're actively engaged, you're leaning forward, you're typing, you're doing these things. So like the screen or the mouse is not that far away from you. When you're lounging back like this is a TV pose, you know, this is what you're going to do when you're watching videos and stuff like that. And I could definitely see the use case for, like, I want to watch a YouTube video, so I do the thing and the whatever. But for me, it's much more a TV watching thing.
Well, I'll take you one step further, Adam, because if you pair this with those XR or AR glasses where you can see your computer display in front of you, now you can lean back in your chair and use your hands to gesture and interact your computer, and then give me the little projection keyboard that we've seen in the past, Jason. Like, I know we've seen that years ago where, like, you light projects on a table and you can type and that sort of, like, I want the next generation of interfaces. I'm tired of mice and keyboards. Like give me, like, because you could, being able to do, not what we're doing with doing the show, but being able to, like, prep for the show while leaning back on the couch would be so cool. So,
And just speaking to that, like, the Meta Quest 3 does hand tracking really remarkably well, like so much better than the OG Quest. You can reach out and grab UI and put it wherever you want. You can reach over there and grab, and you can even type, you know, you can do this and, you know, it'll track you very well. You don't even need a smartwatch is what I'm saying. But what I am saying is, if you had a smartwatch and it was paired to your VR goggles, now we're getting into some Minority Report stuff. Yeah. You know, that's exciting.
Do you remember the old Microsoft HoloLens demos, like the first HoloLens demos that was like the headset that went on and the person was like fixing the plumbing and like that sort of thing? Right. Yeah, like that sort
the
of
mechanic
stuff.
Under the
Right. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah. No. So yeah, I really want to know more about this, so I think I know who I'm gonna be emailing tomorrow.
I would like to know more, and I would like it to work on the Pixel Watch. So there it is. So, all right, cool. Well, thank you, Jason, for that little bit. And we're gonna wrap this show up because we gotta let Adam get back to his family. But we got a couple emails first. I know. I said that knowing. So as always, you can email us at contact@androidfaithful.com. We love to hear from you. And we've got so much responses to stuff we've talked about in the show already. Like, guys, keep it coming. Please tell us your thoughts and all this and your opinions and things like that. And I love our first email, which kind of educates us a bit. Our first email comes in from Ian from Wantage in the UK. Wantage. I don't know how to pronounce that. But Ian writes in and says, "Hey guys, really pleased to have discovered the new podcast after being a long-term listener based in the UK and a former recipient of the email of the week on All About Android." Congratulations. In the last episode of Android Faithful, there was a mention of eSIMs where you said you don't have that much experience with them, so I thought I'd give you mine. I was lucky enough to visit Australia over Christmas for a family wedding. I traveled with my family with our UK phone contract, and it would have cost us 6.50, I don't know how to say pounds, but 6.5 pounds per day. I have not traveled. I all of a sudden can't talk. It would have cost us over 6 pounds per day per person to roam, and a total of 416 pounds. Instead, when we arrived, I signed up for 4 eSIMs from a local provider, giving us calls, SMS, and data for a total of 32 pounds. That's amazing savings. Adding the account as an eSIM meant our existing number still worked, which was useful for SMS two-factor authentication messages. Also, there was no chance of misplacing our UK SIMs. Recently, I discovered there are lots of companies offering data-only eSIMs. I'm off to France this week for work and for my private phone, I have a data-only eSIM for $1.79 for 1 gigabyte. Perfect for my needs. Wynn mentioned in Japan she had a pocket Wi-Fi, but perhaps a data-only eSIM may be a more straightforward alternative. So, yeah. Having 2 SIMs supporting Android phones where one is an eSIM can make traveling a little easier when it comes to mobile data. Keep up the good work. We love the show. Ian Hall, Wantage UK. And thank you, Ian, for giving me a practical execution of how an eSIM could work and provide value, especially in a 2-SIM phone. I had a hard time wrapping my head around eSIMs, and this kind of painted the picture perfectly around exactly what it can do.
Totally.
And just for future reference, 6 pounds, 50 pence.
6 pounds, 50 pence. Yeah. See, I knew that. I've been to England.
See, I was fully expecting this email to say, "I just thought I wanted to give you some of my experience on eSIMs. They suck. Love, Ian." Realistically, though, I switched. So iPhone is eSIM only, obviously. And so when it was time for me to, I had to keep an iPhone active. So I got a Mint SIM, which is now a subsidiary of T-Mobile. So I didn't go far from the tree, but it was kind of cool because when it was time to activate the phone, I just downloaded the Mint app and I, you know, made a payment on the account and it said, "Okay, now push this button to install the eSIM," and bada bing, bada boom, it was done. The problem with eSIMs is when you want to move from one phone to another. Like, as long as you're going to stay within the family, you're good. But I walked into a T-Mobile the other day because it was time to move out of the iPhone and move back into Android. And I told the guy at the counter, I said, "Okay, this phone is my primary. This phone is my secondary. I need this phone to be my primary and this phone to be my secondary." And the second the guy started taking the case off of my iPhone to look for the SIM tray, I knew I was going to be in trouble. Because it doesn't have one. And so, after, you know, kind of, I hate to say, a customer explaining that, then we finally got it all sorted out. But yeah, just like moving eSIMs from one device to another is still pretty much a nightmare. And right. Thanks, Apple, for that.
So it's a little early for eSIMs. Let's just say
it's still early. Yeah,
still working out the kinks.
Ian, sorry. So my husband and I are kind of like been going to Japan like off and on for several years, him decades now, and we just always did pocket Wi-Fi out of reflex. I typed in Japan travel eSIM, and there's like a bajillion results. Apparently, we just missed out. So I will say we're probably going to go back in March, and I will try it, Ian, on your recommendation, because I mean the pocket Wi-Fi is just used mobile data anyway. So I might just try it. I do take your warnings seriously, Adam, that it might be a PITA, but I hadn't tried it. Got to get into the 21st century over with our Japan data. Dang. Thank you.
Yeah, totally.
Never would have thought
about it. And if you're on T-Mobile, pay them $35. They'll give you unlimited data for like a week. It's great.
I did run my data real, like Google Fi data real hard in Japan, unfortunately. So.
Yeah, we're bad. Anyway.
Well, our next email comes from Chad in San Antonio, and yes, the Pocket Cast. I'm so used to using Pocket Cast. It's kind of like Kleenex in my brain, just like what podcast apps are. But Chad in San Antonio had something to say about some podcast app recommendations we got recently. In your January 9th episode, a listener recommended the Podcast Addict app. I want to second that. I've used Beyond Pod, Dogcatcher, and others. I use Pocket Cast faithfully until their disastrous redesign. Ever since, I've happily used Podcast Addict. Recommended. Chad in San Antonio. Beautiful.
Disastrous redesign?
I didn't think the Pocket Cast redesign was disastrous. I know a lot of people, got a lot of blowback, but that's a little hyperbole, Chad. I love you, Chad, but that's
might be a little hyperbolic. Yeah, but yeah. No, I've heard good things about Podcast Addict. I'm a Pocket Cast user myself. I mainly like it because of the web interface, and I don't know if Podcast Addict has that, but you know, I can pull up Pocket Cast on my computer if I wanted to.
I love that. Yeah, play.pocketcast.com. I think you need to be a Pocket Cast Plus customer though.
Yes,
right?
I believe. Yeah, and it was I think it was a $10 lifetime membership when I got it. So
yeah, me too. Okay. It was like $9.99. Exactly. So
well, a lot of people are kind of echoing the I hate Pocket Cast redesign. So I mean, y'all do us a favor and give us in maybe blow by blow what is it you don't like about it? I mean, I'm kind of neutral on it. I don't know,
My biggest problem with it, maybe that's what it is.
I don't know.
Yeah. My biggest problem with it is I went through and made folders for all my podcasts, and it doesn't go from device to device, which kind of is really irritating. Yeah. So never do that again.
Yeah, but hey, Podcast Addict, I loved seeing the recommendations come through and the community kind of echoing that. And, you know, even here in our live show in the chat, some people are talking about how they like it. So that's awesome. I love the circle of feedback. That's what that makes this so special. And I can't think of a better way to close the circle, Jason, than the next one.
Okay, we'll skip to the next one, and it is Ed Ross from Gosport, UK, who says, given the conversation in last week's episode, I thought you might like to see this AF projected on my wall. Oh, there's no image here.
It's in the next slide.
Oh, it is. It's in the slide. Okay. Yep. AF projected on my wall. The image is about 140 inches. Set up Amazon Fire TV stick connected to an Epson projector and audio provided by two Amazon Echo Studio speakers. Oh, all the best.
Amazing. So this hell is in response to my challenge last week when we were talking about stupidly sized television shown at CES that we wanted to. I wanted someone with a TV over 100 inches to take a picture of them watching the show. But Ed showed me up with 140 inches of his projected watching the show, which is horrifying because 100. That means that each of our boxes are roughly about what's 140 divided by three? Math is hard, but
that works.
But bigger than they need to be. Let's just say that. That is almost life size, perhaps.
Is it bigger than life size?
That's not how that works.
Oh, man.
No, that is awesome, though. That is pretty awesome.
That's horrifying to think that I'm that big on somebody's wall. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance.
It's
only
good if it's that big. That's how you savor an episode of Android Faithful is to go larger than life size.
Yep.
Thank you for sending that in, Ed Ross. And thank you, Adam, for being an amazing guest each and every time we have you on whatever show we happen to be doing. It's always good to hang out with you, man.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the invitation to hang out. It was a good time.
Good time. Head by all. What do you want to leave people with? Do you want to point people anywhere in particular?
Sure. You can find me on all the places at Dead Technology, all the places except Twix, because I don't do that anymore. I got the threads, I got the Instagrams, I got the TikToks. Actually, I don't really have a TikTok, but anyway. That's me. And then if you want to find out where I'm writing, that's going to be the Slash Gear, that's going to be the Forbes. And I've got a couple of other clients that I'm working on, so keeping it on the down low for now. And then if you want to see me, if you want to see more of this, and let's be honest, who doesn't? If you want to see more of this, you can join myself and my podcast partner, Clifton Thomas, who is in the chat as we speak, on Benefit of the Dowd. That's youtube.com/benefitofthedowd, D-O-U-D. Not D-O-U-B-T, because we have a branding problem, but that's
it. Didn't start as a branding problem. It started as like a cool joke and yes. like a cool similarity. And then you realized as you went deeper into it, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm guessing anyways.
I've probably lost more than a few listeners to who are looking for benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, but that's okay. It's worth it. Yeah. It's worth it. It is.
The pun is always worth the lost listeners.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, we got some momentum. I'm happy about it.
Right on. Well, it's great to see you, Adam. Thank you again. We'll have you back soon. We'll also have you back soon because you're on every week, Wynn. Tell us what's going on with you.
Yeah, I'm an Android developer. That's my day job. I'm back to working, so the Android brain is going, and hopefully one day there will be more Android technical talks for you. If you're the Android developer type to view on my website, randomlytyping.com, where I have video, talks and associated video and code. And you can also find me mostly on Instagram and Threads, where I follow Adam. I'm very much so not on Twix these days, at Queen Code Monkey. And when Threads actually does allow you to follow the Fediverse, maybe you'll find me more active on at Queen Code Monkey. Wait. Hold on. QueenPoeMonkey at Mastodon.social. That's all we need threads, y'all. I can't keep... It's so long.
How do we do this?
I don't know.
How do we keep it straight? How do we expect anyone else to keep it straight? I don't know.
You got to be dead technology on all the things. Like, as soon as there's a new social network, I go grab dead technology, never touch it again. It's great.
Yeah.
Same here. I'm with RonXO. I jump on RonXO. I need the app that allows me to type something once and post it to all of them.
Yeah.
And that's what the Fediverse should do, right? And so like if once Blue Sky can connect to Mastodon and Threads and they're all in together, then great. I can just do the one publish and then it'll be fine. Then my life will be easier. So yeah. Mm-hmm. That said, you can follow me at RonXO across all the various different places. I'm most active on Instagram. Lately I'm in Christmas trees. So if you like Christmas trees, check that out.
It's a yearly tradition.
It is. It really is. I took a good one today. I have one in the snow. I didn't post it yet.
I appreciate your years long dedication to
that. I feel bad for my family because here's the thing. So the folks who don't know, every year, I'm going to tell the story now because why not? We're running long.
Hell yeah.
When I lived in San Francisco, you would often see Christmas trees not at the holidays, i.e. as the one that started this when I saw a Christmas tree out on the sidewalk in August.
Oh, which really?
In San Francisco, it's not some stoners, oh yeah, let's throw out the Christmas tree, right? And so like, it was very funny that we would see Christmas trees not in the season. Then that led me to, anytime I saw a Christmas tree, to post it, which now has become posting Christmas trees after Christmas. That's my thing. But once I moved from New York City, where you could often see a Christmas tree on the sidewalk in February, I'm now in the suburbs where people get those trees the hell out of their house very quickly. So they're fewer.
It's the New Year's tradition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But anyway. But yeah, follow me on RonXO across all the various social stuff. And also, if you like pinball, please check out Scorebit in the Google Play Store. It is a mobile app that lets you track your pinball scores. Me and my friends over at Scorebit work very hard on that. If you downloaded it, hey, give it a review. That helps us. So I would appreciate, even if you haven't used it or downloaded it, give it a review. Give it 5 stars. Come on, Android faithful. Help me out. And that's in the Google Play Store, S-C-O-R-B-I-T, Scorebit. Very easy to do. Appreciate everyone. Appreciate you. Scorebit. Thank you.
So. Scorebit. Thank you, Ron.
So before we sign off, can I just do one last little tribute to Cliff, who is still in the comments? Cliff, the Gaffer's tape is back, baby. So that's for you. Right. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. You can do your thing now, Jason.
I hope you got that, Cliff, because I have no idea what he's talking about.
I'll tell you off air.
Okay. All right. Good. What about me? I guess you probably just want, or I probably just want you to go to freejasonnewsletter.com. Freejasonnewsletter.com. I'm not trapped anywhere. It's just a free newsletter, and it involves me, and it's a .com. So go there. And actually, I'm telling need to go there because tomorrow I'm going to have a big announcement. I've got a big announcement, everybody. It's finally here. I've got an announcement, and it's going to happen tomorrow. So freejasonnewsletter.com. You can also go to raygun.fun, and that has like all my social links, and you know it's everything all in one place. But there you go. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I'm not going to spoil it, but I know the announcement, and it's very cool, and you're all going to want to tune in to make sure you find out what it is, because I'm excited about it.
So, darn. Yeah. And it's not that I'm at the Samsung event because I won't be.
No, it's that he has joined Android Faithful again. No,
for 2024, they've renewed me for the season.
Hey, there you go.
No. It is a worthy announcement, Jason. I'm excited to see it hit the light of day. So
thank you, man. And Noah, cousin of Jai, I'm not running for president. maybe next year.
How can you run for president? You're still in jail.
Well, Jason, after that performance in Iowa yesterday, there's no way your campaign was shot. So.
All right, one of these days you think I'd learn my lesson. Anyways, let's close the show. We do the show every Tuesday evening. Subscribe at androidfaithful.com. Send us email, like we said, contact@androidfaithful.com. And of course, you can support us directly through the Patreon. We really appreciate when you do that because, you know, you're supporting us, each of us directly in doing this show, and we're offering extra bonus stuff for you in exchange. And also, we just love you and thank you for enabling us to do this each and every week. It's Android Faithful. We're so happy to have you all on board, and we will see you next time. That is next Tuesday on this show. Take care, everybody.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.